Hello. Here's a thought that I don't think many of us appreciate nowadays. The beginning of the second book of the Torah, Sefer Shmos, starts with Ve'ele Shmos Bnei Yisrael Haboyim Mitzrayim. These are the names of the sons of Israel coming to Egypt. Eis Yaakov with Yaakov, Ishu Veso Bo, each man with his family. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zevulun, Vinyamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher. So, I think in our current media culture, where we are so used to having for example, in television serials, when you have a TV show, one of the first things that they do at the beginning, at the top of the hour, is they have something like last time on, and then they talk about, and then they show some scenes from the previous week's or episode or the previous episode, and now for the conclusion, and now for part two. So we're used to having this idea. However, the Torah doesn't need to have this idea. And if you look at the other Sfarim of Tanakh, we don't have this at all. Sefer Vayikra just jumps right into the middle of the action. Bamidbar also starts with a new story. Even Sefer Dvarim just puts the context of where Moshe is speaking, but it doesn't remind us formally of what happened right before. And the same thing is true with the other books of all of Tanakh, the Bible. Yet here in Sefer Shmos, we're so used to the idea because we think that this is a natural thing. On the previous episode of the Torah, there were 12 sons of Yaakov, and they went to Egypt with Yaakov. And Yosef Hayu b'Mitzrayim, and I'm going to list all the names of the 12 sons, and also let you know that Yosef was in Egypt. We know all of this already. There's really no need to repeat any of this. So what we need to appreciate is put beautifully by one of the great Perushim, one of the great commentaries of the 1800s, the Malbim. The Malbim has a beautiful explanation here on the first seven verses here of Chumash, and what I'd like to do is share with you his thoughts in my own words. The Malbim says there's no need for a recap. We don't have to hear the names of Yaakov's sons again. We heard them plenty in the previous parshios in Sefer Bereishis. So what's going on over here? Well, what's going on is that we are about to start Sefer Shmos, and we're going to hear about how the Jews are now going to be crushed into an awful, oppressive slavery. And this should lead us to a question, a general question about human nature, which is, how on earth could such a thing happen? If you look at last week's parsha, Parshas Vayechi, it's very clear that Yaakov and Yosef and the whole family were tremendously respected by Egypt, by Paro, by the royal family, by the royal government, and by all of Mitzrayim. I will add that it is not just Yosef. The Egyptian nation revered Yaakov tremendously. In fact, you see this with the language that Rashi uses when he explains why Yaakov asked Yosef not to be buried in Mitzrayim. He doesn't just say, I want to be buried in my family burial plot in Hebron. He says, don't bury me in Mitzrayim. One of the explanations that Rashi offers as to why he didn't want to be buried in Mitzrayim, he said, because if my body remains in Mitzrayim, the Egyptians are going to worship me as a god. So you understand? Yaakov understood that he was a highly revered member of Egyptian society, revered to the point of being worshipped, and he didn't want that. So here we have Yaakov, a man who was revered to almost worshipped. When he went and he was buried in Eretz Canaan, in the Maras HaMachpelah, in the cave in Hebron, there was such a huge outpouring of people attending the funeral procession, marching all the way from Mitzrayim to the border of the land of Canaan, which Midrashim say was actually at war with Mitzrayim at the time. That's why the Mitzrayim did not go into the land to help with the burial. It was only Yaakov's sons who attended to the burial. The Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, stayed on the other side of the border. And the Canaanites, the Canaanim, looked at this And they said, this is a huge mourning for Egypt. And which is why the location where the Egyptians stayed on the other side of the border became known as Evel Mitzrayim. So with all of this as a prelude, how on earth did things degrade to the extent that now the Egyptians are enslaving and murdering Jews? Throw on that Yosef, of course. So here is how to explain it. Ve'ele shemos b'nei Yisrael. These are the names of the sons of Israel. Coming into Egypt, each man and his family. And then lists the names. The Malbim says the meaning of this is that originally when the Jews first moved to Egypt, they weren't Jews. They were individuals. There were individuals who came with Yaakov, the highly revered figure, and each of the sons was known by name. In fact, Rashi has a beautiful comment here where he comments that the reason we say this is because Hashem counts tzaddikim like he counts stars, calling each star by name, b'shem yikra. That's the ultimate sign that you're not just a number, but you are a name. This is one of the great fears that they had when social security numbers came into American consciousness some 85, 90 years ago. Is everyone just going to be a number? No. You are also a name. What is also true is that besides for being individuals who are connected with Yaakov and who are known individually by name, is that Yosef was still in Egypt as well. And even the extended clan numbered 70, which is a reasonable number to contemplate. People can know, an individual easily knows 70 people in his life. So here they came, each man with his household, and a total of 70. And then the Pasuk Vav describes, Vayamas Yosef, V'chol Echav, V'chol Hador Hahu. First, Yosef dies. He's their man in the government. Then all of his brothers die, the brothers who were known by name. And then that whole generation, what does the whole generation mean? It means those 70 people. And then, Uvnei Yisrael paru vayishrutzu vayirbu vayatzmeh me'od me'od. Then the Jewish people were fruitful, but they swarmed. Vayishrutzu has the word sheretz. Sheretz means that they multiplied to the point that for the Egyptians, they were no longer distinguishable as individuals. And then they became powerful. And powerful means that more powerful than Egyptian society was willing to tolerate. Vatimalei ha'aretz osam, the land was filled with them. This implies that they were no longer merely in the land of Goshen, as Yosef had arranged, but that they began to spill over into the entire country of Mitzrayim. So what you see from here is that if you want to know how it's possible to take people who were once treated well and then notice that they are no longer treated well, the first step is in those first two words of this Sefer of Chumash. Ve'ele shemos, these are their names. There is a well-known idea in modern psychology, and even people who don't like modern psychology have admitted to this point. I believe the point was made by Dale Carnegie back 100 years ago, which is that if you want to connect to someone, you say their name. And Parshas Shmos is notorious for not saying names. In fact, when we get to know Amram and Yocheved, Moshe's parents, we're not even told what their names are. He is a man from the house of Levi, and he marries a daughter of Levi. We don't even know who they are. The first step to not recognizing a person as a human being of value is to not acknowledge that they have a name and not to call them by name. Hence, concentration camps, their numbers in Auschwitz were put on their arm. Then people didn't want to call them by their name, which is why there's such a strong Gemara. It's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, I think, Daf Nun Ches, that talks about people who have no share in the world to come. And one of the types of people who has no share in the world to come is Hamechana Shem Chavero, someone to call his friend by a nickname. Doesn't mean a nickname they like. It means you give him some name. You twist his name somehow in a way that he doesn't like. He might not even admit that he doesn't like it, but it's not the name he wants to be known by. Ein lo chelek olam haba, has no share in the world to come. Because not calling a person by the name by which they identify themselves is a way of dehumanizing them. And this is why it's interesting. If you take a look a few times throughout Chumash Bereishis, and even in Shmos, when a person is called by name, and the name is repeated, for example, the angel calls Avraham, Avraham at the Akedah. Rashi says that is Lashon Chiba. When you say someone's name twice, then it's a sign, it's a language of affection, because people like to hear their name. There's a Hasidish explanation for why the Baal Shem Tov's name was Yisrael. And the explanation is that the Jewish people felt so downtrodden that merely hearing the name Yisrael, which is a word for the Jewish people in general, is something that gave the Jewish people more hope, that they heard Yisrael. So this is something that, yes, it applies on a national setting and it applies politically. But here we need to remember that any lesson that is true politically is also true personally. And if it's something, if it's a lesson as simple as say someone's name, which is something that I know I've mentioned in the past, people have heard me say this in the past. If you, there's a problem in your family and you're not getting along with someone, then say their name. And if you have a member of your family who you notice is not saying your name, and he's calling you past the salt and just telling you what to do and not saying your name, then you know that there's a problem. And to repair that problem, we need to look to the Ve'ele Shemos B'nei Yisrael. That's all for now. Have a wonderful day.